Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan joining you remotely. I have Mikey and John joining me as well. It's been a little bit of a weird schedule for our podcast these past couple weeks. Mikey was remote. Now I'm remote. So we're going to bring you a two-parter today. We're going to give you the depressing UTSA recap, and we're also going to follow up with a Virginia preview for Saturday's game. So let's start with the UTSA recap. And I mean, have you guys fully recovered from that loss yet?
I have not. You know, I feel like going into last week, I believe it was, you know, going into the Nebraska game, I said on here probably 10 different times that I, you know, truly believe that this was our year. And I feel like, you know, I'm sounding like a broken record at this point because I say that every year. And then we'll have a, you know, devastating loss with to a good team. I mean, not to take anything away from UTSA. That's a team we should beat, and one that when we start beating them, we'll definitely know that our program is, you know, taking those small steps in the right direction. So not recovered, but hopefully a win this week will fix that.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of run the gamut in terms of, like, I didn't consume any kind of Twitter or I didn't rewatch the game for a good while. Like, I just, the fact that you could have been starting 2-0 in the Brett Bielema era pretty easily, you could be putting yourself in a very good position to go into Virginia and possibly come back for a big Maryland game. Now, granted, I've done the rationalization to at this point already, where it's, well, you know, if we come out and we beat Virginia, then we're 2-1 going into week four against Maryland. And if you told me we were 2-1 going into week four, then, you know, that's okay. But I think, honestly, I was just very disappointed after that showing against Nebraska, where, you know, you're not going to fire on all sides of the ball at all times. That's obviously understandable, especially with the new staff, new scheme, trying to implement everything. I think that's more understandable on the defensive side in terms of guys getting used to it. But after what the offense showed in week zero, to just come out and completely lay a dud like that, I couldn't believe it. It was very confusing that it took a good portion of the game. I think it was almost midway through the fourth quarter until we started attacking the flats and where the edge blitzers were coming from and throwing to guys who were occupying spaces where they just, it was, I was like, okay, so it we finally made an adjustment to that, but where was this the first three quarters of the game? So I don't know. It was incredibly disappointing, but I'm looking forward to hopefully going out to Virginia and getting a dub.
So John, I know you've been starting to break down the film a little bit, but from your perspective, were there like one or two things that you thought in that game, you know, if you fix those, you win the game, that you could point to, or was it across the board?
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of, I'm not going to say across the board, because there were definitely a couple things, and it was funny, Craig kind of called it out on Twitter, and then him and I were kind of corresponding back and forth, because it was the way that UTSA was selling out to stop the run. It was a great game plan by them, obviously, because it worked, but the counter to that is either running stretch play, some kind of outside handoff or pitch plays, getting guys on the edges, or the thing that I couldn't understand is there was so much motion, whether it be, you know, I've kind of dubbed it passive and active motion, which I don't even know, to be quite honest, guys, I don't even know if those are technical terms. I just made them up because I was like, this makes sense to my brain, and the casual football fan would understand what passive versus active motion is and kind of how to delineate those things. But there was hardly any of either of those things when I was watching the game. The little bit that I've watched back, I didn't understand, because especially the active motion, when you can get guys going on the edge and you've got defenders selling out in the box, they're going to have to respect that and either spread out and get to that guy who's going in motion, or you're just going to get a clean seal on an edge and you're going to get chunk plays here, there, everywhere. I just couldn't believe that they didn't adjust to that and see what was going on. And it's not like they, I know that, you know, Chase Brown and Chase Hayden were out, and I think Mike Epstein got banged up a little bit, but at the same time, you still have the horses that back there to get the job done. Josh McCray showed out really well. I mean, it took them a while to get Isaiah some touches. I don't know. It felt like the offense, I'm not going to say is more to blame, but had a lot more potential to take care of this game, and they just didn't.
And I almost wondered then, last week, I believe you guys mentioned me about mindset, you know, going into a non-Power 5 opponent, a team that you should beat, you know, they're reading the spreads, you know, they're seeing that they're favored. Coming off a big win, almost, John, I believe you mentioned that it was a trap game with Virginia this weekend. Coming out flat like that last weekend, it almost makes me believe that, you know, they probably were you know, overconfident in practice, maybe didn't watch those extra 10 minutes of film that they did, you know, prepping for the Nebraska game, and all those little things, they add up, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, that's the truth, but it could be a reasoning for, you know, the poor performance.
Yeah. And John, just to add a little bit to your perspective on the offensive side of the ball, one thing that I was a little bit disappointed in was the line play. It's been talked about as one of Illinois' strengths coming into the season, a lot of experience coming back. And I know a lot of it was, like you said, that UTSA pressure on defense and, you know, selling out a lot of times on the run, but there were a lot of missed blocks, missed assignments, things like that. If you're going to go through that tape, and when you probably freeze frame a few times, there's going to be some freeze frames where there's guys in the backfield and linemen that are just either laying on the ground or just standing next to nobody that just missed blocks or, you know, picked up the wrong guy. So that was something that stuck out to me, that I thought Illinois was going to be able to handle that pressure, and they really struggled.
Yeah, I totally agree. And honestly, going through that Nebraska film, it was pretty eye-opening, because I know we didn't dominate. Like, we only averaged maybe 4 yards a carry, but that was, a lot of that was due to just time control. But at the same time, there were a lot of plays there where the guard play was not quite up to snuff. And that's, you know, nothing necessarily against Blake Gerasotti or Jack Bedovanac or Pilstrom. They just might not be Power 5 caliber starter guys, and they might be very good in terms of swing guard or rotation guys. And the one of the reasons why I was championing Julian Pearl so much as my X factor for the offense is because that's a guy who has starter potential at the Power 5 level, and those other guys just might not. And that was evidenced by a fair amount of missed assignments. I know their PFF grades. I haven't gotten too much into the offensive film, still working through the defense special teams, but I saw enough in the game, and even just the little bits that I'm parsing through as I'm scrolling through the defensive film, where it's just they need more. And when you have that kind of talent at the tackle and the center position, I don't know if it's one of those where you overload one of those sides, where even you try and bring Palcho in, or you just put someone on the left side with Vidarian. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but they're definitely going to need, you're right, Danny, they need more from their guard play.
I will say, our kicks back-to-back weeks, the three of us,
damn,
kind of hammering these picks. We've been pretty good. Mikey, 107 yards, came pretty close to that with Isaiah's 101 yards, I think, mm-hmm, 8 catches this past week. But my Daniel Barker call, I think I said 5 catches, 67 yards and a touchdown. I think he had 5 catches, 74 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then John had Tariq Barnes, I believe, who I think led the team in tackles and played a pretty solid game himself. So I'd say 3 for 3 again in week two. And when we get to these picks later on for the UVA preview, I'm hoping we got the same magic.
Definitely picking Art Sitowski. We need him to have a big game. So, I was just saying, you know, if history repeats itself, I'm going with him.
Yeah, I like it.
Can we just talk for a second? Now, granted, there's a lot of doom and gloom. Two things. First thing, were you guys thinking, like, as that ball was in the air? Because I'm sure, like, all of us have watched enough football. Like, we could all tell that ball was going out of bounds on that last throw. And when you kind of see that, and that Casey Washington has a chance to, like, grab it, but you know his momentum's going to take him out of bounds, my first thought was, toss it back to Donnie.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, wait, if he knows he's drifting out of bounds.
Which a good receiver does.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was hoping, as he was falling back, like, maybe he's going to go up, catch it, and toss it back to, I think Carlos Sandy was in on that play too. And then Donnie, both of them were there. And I was like, maybe one of them, he can flick it to him. But he ended up coming down. He ended up getting his foot closer than I thought on the replay, but still, you know, a foot out of bounds, unfortunately.
And then the second thing, Isaiah Williams on that last drive. I mean, that was just,
oh yeah,
I'm not going to use bad words, but that was Brett Bielema has uttered a phrase before at, I think it is SEC media days, that it's borderline something. And oh my gosh, Isaiah, that one contested catch that he had, like, he's transitioning pretty well into becoming a wide receiver in terms of, mm-hmm, being able to catch the ball, you know, be a fluid athlete in terms of not thinking like, oh, I've caught the ball, now I need to transition into, you know, running and making guys miss. He's looking pretty fluid. And that last drive, you need a playmaker. I mean, it can't just be Blake Hayes. So it's nice to see Isaiah Williams emerging.
What did he have on that last drive? Did he have 4 catches? And at least one of them was on fourth down to move the chains. I think he had maybe 4 catches on that, which was insane. Just keep feeding him when he's hot.
Feed one. Hashtag feed one. Yeah. I might tweet that before the game.
That's one of the weird things too, in terms of the distribution of touches. like this game, it was Daniel Barker getting involved and not so much Luke Ford. I don't know why both of them can't have four catches each or five targets each, I should say, in terms of just trying to get them the ball. Isaiah, he didn't get going until really later in the game, even though they were trying to kind of force feed him touches. You got enough talent at running back. I understand the wide receiver talent isn't there, and maybe they're keying the tight ends, but still, it's just there's so many weapons there on offense that it's not like you're so bare that you just have to commit to running the ball. So that was one of the more confusing things for me, but I think I don't know. Unless you guys got any more thoughts, we can probably put a bow on that depressing loss to UTSA.
Should we hop over from one orange and blue team to another orange and blue team that we're facing this week?
The battle of the orange and blues.
The revenge of Rod Smith.
Rod Smith is probably going to be sitting up in the booth. You know, what is he over there, an analyst or a
passing game analyst or something like that?
Yeah. So you got Rod over there. You know, he obviously knows all the guys particularly well on the offensive side of the ball, knows their tendencies. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of those meetings where he's telling the Virginia defensive coordinator how to stop certain guys.
Yeah, at the very least, he'll know, you know, the players and the skill sets on the offensive side of the ball for Illinois. I'm sure even though he's an offensive analyst, like you said, he's probably going to be in those defensive meetings this week, given the breakdown of Illinois' players.
Yeah, and I think what's most important is he knows all their weaknesses, too. He knows, you know, where to stop them at. I'm not sure. I saw Brandon Peters was practicing this week. Has there been any word on his status? I'm sure they won't say anything. They'll, you know, keep that quiet. But he knows Brandon, you know, better than our current staff. So be interesting to see.
Yeah. What's up with this 10 a.m. start?
I hate it.
I don't understand that.
It's just going to be bizarre to be. Are you guys? Yeah, both of you guys are the Mountain Time boys right now, right?
Well, the East Coast games usually start at noon.
But it starts at 11 Eastern, so it's going to be 9 for you guys. 9 in the morning.
Yeah, it's literally the first. Yeah, 9 a.m. for me. I'm behind the scenes here. I'm sitting in Utah right now. But 9 a.m. on Saturday morning for me, and it's the first game of the day. So Illinois likes getting those early start times, whether it be a week before the regular season or just an hour before all the other games start. So all eyes on Illinois again, at least for the first quarter.
I will say, back when I was playing, obviously the most fun games to play are the night games, but the best games to play are the morning games because you're the first game on, you get it over with, and then you can watch college football the rest of the day. When it's a night game, you're sitting in the hotel room, you know, you wake up, have breakfast, 9:30, and then you're in your room, maybe a meeting, an hour meeting here or there, but you're in your room then from 10:30 to 2:30 until you leave for the game. So it's definitely a lot of waiting around and you know, when they're on the road, you got the flight back after, you're not getting in until after midnight. So I'm sure the boys, you know, although the 10 o'clock start's not what they're used to or body clock wise, you know, I'm sure they'll still be pumped to go play and be the first game of the day.
No doubt.
And that's one of those two where I think Bielema kind of alluded to that in his pressers this week in terms of like the night game, maybe throwing the guys off a little bit in terms of just the length of time from when they woke up to then when they're actually playing to now. It's just, he even said, you know, 9 o'clock is when they usually practice in the mornings during the week. So they'll be kind of adjusted to that 10 a.m. body clock feel, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see. Question for you guys, just because I watched the condensed game of Virginia's matchup versus William and Mary. They kind of dominated them 43-0, but I don't think anyone expected much from William and Mary. Going a different route though, Virginia, they have the helmets with the numbers on one side. Do we like that or do we not like that? Logo on one half, number on the other half. Cool or not cool?
Yeah, I don't like that look. I would prefer just logo. I don't know. I'm into symmetry, so symmetric things, if that's a word. But I don't know. I mean, I do like their white uniforms. They're all white ones. Those are pretty sweet. But you know, they'll be at home, so probably won't be wearing those.
If you're going to be throwing out like some kind of, you either have to have a lot of money behind you, like Oregon did, and they were still pretty good at that point when they unveiled all the uniform shenanigans, but your program has to be in a little bit better straight. Like if, I don't know, say like, maybe an Iowa came out with like some big time adjustment. Like I wouldn't personally like it because I think they got a pretty classic look. And even though I don't like Iowa, I think that you can respect, you know, like a classic uniform look, but if they came out and they tried to do something weird, I'd be like, well, you know, maybe they think that they need to adjust to the times for recruiting purposes or something like that. And if they go on to be a 9-10 win team that year and then, you know, keep that look and then in perpetuity, and then I'd be like, okay, well, you know, something with the program, and it doesn't really matter. But if you're like a Virginia team that hasn't ever really ascended to anything great in the ACC and you're messing around with uniforms, it kind of feels like I've got a term of phrase that I want to use, but I'm not going to. But
we'll spare the listeners.
I was going to say candy bleep uniforms. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I kind of agree. For me, it seems like they're a little bit gimmicky. Like you said, Mikey, the double logo is a good look. And for the kind of traditional programs, the blue bloods, if you will, of college football, when you go no logos, like a Notre Dame or a Penn State or something like that, I also feel like that's a pretty clean look. But when you just go number, and especially number on just one half, to me, that's a little gimmicky. But Bronco Mendenhall, gimmicky guy. If you've seen his depth chart, you'll know that he lists the position as football player for his quarterback, running back, wide receiver weapons, and he gives them number 99 and 98, and they just run around as like 6'4 running back. So he's no stranger to the gimmicks.
Yeah, that was probably the weirdest thing, like throwing on that William and Mary tape and just being like, why do they have guys wearing 99 catching passes and 98 like taking handoffs? What are we doing here? Like, come on, like it's gotta, I mean,
six,
I guess
four running backs. What is, yeah, this Derrick Henry?
Well, that's soon gonna be our boys in orange and blue when you get, true, all these big boy running backs coming in. But I don't think they'll be wearing 98.
It's just funny to me that he's got, and even if you look at the defensive side of the roster, he's got some weird positions listed for some of those secondary players. Like, I feel like they have 14 positions listed in the secondary, and it's just Bronco Mendenhall taking his BYU squad and moving them over to the East Coast to head up the Wahoos. So I don't know what to expect, but there's a lot of weird trickeration watching that game. They had some interesting jet sweeps, and they'd motion their QB, Brennan Armstrong, to wide receiver and then into the backfield as a running back. And they just kind of more of a fluid depth chart, I guess. And I don't know. Illinois got to be prepared because we'll see some sorts of trickeration that we probably won't see throughout the rest of the season. But it's hard to scout when you don't know who's, yeah, lining up where.
Yeah, and I think, too, just William and Mary, like, you know,
no disrespect to them.
No disrespect at all. No, but it's tough to watch film, you know, when you're scouting an opponent and the team they played before, you know, would probably get beat by IMG. Like, honestly,
Bishop, you know, Sycamore.
So, yeah. So it's tough, but you know, the trickery, all that, the jet sweeps, you know, they knew they were going to win that game. They're running stuff knowing that Illinois has got to prepare for it regardless. So,
right.
Smart job by them.
Here's a trivia question for you. Let's see if either of you know it. Where is William & Mary located?
Like what state or what city?
Either or. If you get one of the two, I'll be very surprised.
Virginia? I think it's in Virginia, right?
Yeah, you're right. Williamsburg, wow. Virginia. I would not have known that myself.
Story time with John, even though I wasn't there. Eighth grade field trip to Washington, D.C. My buddies snuck onto the William and Mary court. Like, I've got one friend who's just an absolute fiend of getting, like, he got into Jerry World one time for free, like, to a fairly big, it was like an NFL opener or something like that, because he lives down in Texas right now. Shout out Mike Mack. And
Mike Mack.
It's one of those where I like have this video, this really old grainy video of a bunch of like eighth graders just bouncing basketballs around on the court at William and Mary because they somehow snuck into the gym on their eighth grade Washington, D.C. field trip. I mean, there was a little bit of FOMO there, but I also just had all those days off, so I didn't care that much. But that's like, wow, kind of why I have a general awareness of where that is, because I just associate it with the Washington, D.C. trip from my grade school.
If you had given me like six guesses, maybe I would have got that it was in Virginia. I guess just by the fact that a lot of these early season games, they'll play against local-ish teams in the non-con schedule. So that's probably a very good educated guess. But I would not have guessed that you had a William and Mary memory tied to that school, which helped you out there.
Yeah, Mikey, you got any fun William and Mary stories? Did they send you any like recruiting mail back in the day?
No, they did not.
I feel like I might have even gotten something. So I'm like, if I got something from them, then you definitely probably didn't. You're just like, throw this in the trash because.
Yeah, maybe I did, but don't remember it. But
I have my only tie to William and Mary is my grandparents are named William and Mary. So shout out them. I know they listen. So
shout out.
Got a lot of shout outs on the pod.
Yeah.
Mike, you got any shout outs you want to get out? Dan and I have gotten ours.
I'll shout out my mom and dad.
That's just classy right there.
I don't think your mom took too kindly to our clickbait last week.
Yeah, no, she was laughing about it. I will say that. She thought it was funny.
All right, good. Mikey was not hurt to anyone that thought Mikey might have been injured when they clicked on our podcast. He was just, the only injury was his cell phone connection.
I do got to give one plug here. I officially joined a flag football league. Not to get off on a tangent here, but.
Oh, please do so.
Tuesdays, Lincoln Park South, grass fields. Be there starting next week, yeah. Even though I won't at the first game, but.
All right.
It's go time. So
listen, Mikey, I'll go out there. I'll get my dad used to get in the lift and tape all of my high school games. I'll get him up there. I'll break down the film. I'll get you the scouting report so that you know exactly what your team's strengths and weaknesses are. I'll get it if I can fit it in, because I think Johnny Edits out here doing the podcast edits because both these fools are out of town and then doing some video breakdown. But if I can slide in, I'll get you your scouting report for your flag football league, because that honestly that might be my number one priority.
Wouldn't that be incredible if after the breakdown video, after the game's over, you just put in a couple bonus clips of Mikey just running routes on some 35-year-old finance guy that is out of shape and has not played football in probably 15 years. Mikey's just breaking ankles out there. That would be incredible. Might have to do that.
Yeah. I'll definitely keep the podcast updated, for our tons and tons of listeners, who I'm sure want to know about it. But I'm excited for it.
It'll be you might break Illini Twitter with some clips of you.
Oh, I'm going to be posting some highlights from the Field Pass account.
All right. We'll look forward to it. Do we want to get into our player predictions for this week? See if we can keep that momentum riding. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on us at this point because everyone that's tuned in is pretty much getting a cheat code as to who's going to be playing well this week.
Yeah. I really wanted to go with Isaiah Williams again. I feel like I want to get a – pretty soon I'm going to run out of names, though, but I want to get a fresh name out there. So I'm going to go with Casey Washington.
Oh,
very bold prediction here.
Specific stat of the week.
How many sideline catches?
Yeah.
He always gets those incredible sideline catches.
He lives at the first down marker too.
He does. Yeah. So I'm going Casey. I've been a fan of his for a while. I think he runs good routes, catches the ball. However, he hasn't been able to put it all together yet. I don't think we've truly seen a complete game out of him. But with all that being said, I'm going 8 for 80. Eight catches, 80 yards. And one or two big plays. I'm going to go two big plays, just so next week when we're talking about this, there's no leeway there for Dan to give me mess with me on my prediction. So he's going to have two big plays as well, whether it's a first down, on a deep third down conversion where we need it, or a big block fumble recovery if someone on offense fumbles. So just have two big plays. So there's my bold prediction of the week for you guys.
Mikey's specific stats of the week. I like that one too, because Virginia's secondary is near the bottom of the ACC. So I do see the Illinois receivers having a big game if either Peters or Sitkowski has time to get them the ball and is on the money this week. So I like that prediction.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for my X factor of the week. I'm going to go with Tony Peterson. I'm not going player. I'm going coach because
TP.
I think, if we're talking about willing guys to having good performances, we need a strong bounce back from Coach Peterson. It's one of those where as I was sitting there thinking about the game after the fact, I was wondering if putting Art in for the Brandon Peters game plan worked out really well, because he was just this is the guy who's in, but none of the calls really changed. But having a week to prep with Art as the starting known as the starting quarterback, he went in and completely changed it up from what they were showing week zero. I don't exactly know. Maybe it was just a change in scheme because they thought UTSA was going to make some kind of adjustments to what they saw in the week zero, and they tried to think three moves ahead and it didn't end up working out. But I'm going to be curious to see how he responds this week, and hopefully, you know, he comes out and his play sequencing is better, and, you know, there's a little bit more diversity to his calls and a lot more action and misdirection to try and confuse a fairly good Virginia defense. I mean, Danny, like you're saying, there's some potential weaknesses in the back of the defense, but I think that there's definitely ways that you can attack it with their skill position players, and especially the tight ends. I want to see both of them get involved, and I hope that he, you know, I don't like this switching off of Barker and Ford. I want to see a game where he gets both of them involved and early and often. So that's my X factor of the week.
That's a little bit of an outside the box one. I'm going to go also outside the box, or maybe inside the box, depending where they put him this week. I'm going Sidney Brown. Depending on where they station him on the back end, he might be in the box, he might be out of the box, but I don't think Illinois had an interception this year, and I'm feeling one, at least one this week, and if not a couple. But I think Sidney Brown's going to be the benefactor of at least one interception this week. Virginia throws the ball around quite a bit. Their QB, Brendan Armstrong, he's been pretty accurate, and I think he's kind of an underrated guy. He'll scramble around a little bit. I don't think he's the best at getting out of the pocket and running the ball, but he's kind of a strong guy and he's hard to tackle. His passing skills, I mean, he's on the money with his passes, but he's not the most refined passer. When you watch him throw the ball, he looks a little awkward, but he tends to get the ball where he needs to. So he's going to be dropping back and throwing a lot of passes. I think Illinois' defensive line is going to get a little bit of pressure this week, and I'm thinking Sidney Brown is maybe a deflected pass interception here, or just jumps a route. So that's going to be my pick of the week.
I can see it happening for sure. And to piggyback off of what you were saying a little bit there, Dan, in terms of what Virginia's offense is going to look like, honestly, it's going to be pretty similar. And I was thinking the same thing, and I think I even vocalized it in the pod last week. Frank Harris, you were talking about kind of an unrefined passer. Frank Harris didn't blow me out of the water in terms of any kind of tape last year that I saw on him. And then he came out there and, you know, had an absolute great performance against the Illini defense. So I don't think that's exactly going to happen again, but it's one of those where it's a similar type of offense to what UTSA and Nebraska ran in terms of the zone read option scheme that's going to try and get them running the ball on you and getting your defense crowded in the box so then they can spread you out a little bit on the outside. So we'll hopefully get some adjustments from Ryan Walters. But
yeah, last week Frank Harris had Zachary Franklin, who was just tearing us up, particularly in the first half. So Illinois is going to have to do a good job of shutting down. Virginia's got a couple of receivers. 99, depending on where they put him. He's a good player. Key Thompson. And then they have a couple of receivers. They have a pretty fast guy. I think his name's like Billy Kemp. And he's a slot receiver that's small, but he's a hard guy to stay in front of. So we'll see who draws that assignment this week. But they have a couple guys on the outside that can burn us, and I'm hoping they don't repeat the Zachary Franklin game of that UTSA matchup last week. One other thing I do want to add, though, just a random thing I noticed. When looking at the box score for Virginia last week, their quarterback, Brennan Armstrong, and then their backup quarterback is Armstead. So they've got these arm guys as the QBs. Do we think is Armstrong just like the power thrower and Armstead is like the accurate thrower? Is there another arm in the stable QBs we're going to see this week, or what?
I don't know. Or is it like a Greenland Iceland thing where we got going on here, where it's like,
yeah, it's the
Greenland's
opposite.
Actually ice and Iceland's actually green. Like what, I don't know. We'll have to tune in Saturday at 10 a.m. to find out.
Yeah. 10 on, central.
It's on ACC network.
Oh my yeah. God. That, I forgot about that.
Do we have to like buy a subscription to that, or how? Or how does that work?
Yeah.
Provide some insight to the listeners.
Might have to find a not so legal stream somewhere. Or if you have, I think YouTube TV as ACC network. I mean, if, depending on your cable package, Mikey, you'll have to see. Maybe you'll have to scout one of those links out online from the deep web and see if you can watch the game. See how committed you really are.
Yeah, I would never do that. So I'm probably going to be buying a week or monthly ACC network package.
Yeah. You can usually find one of those like free subscriptions for a week and just sign up, and then as soon as the game's over, just cancel your subscription.
Yeah.
Maybe pull one of those moves. Or you just go to Charlottesville and buy a $9 ticket like I saw this week. Not too difficult for a barrier to entry to this week's game, except for the fact that you have to fly to Charlottesville with like that tiny airport and that small town. But once you're there, pretty much walk in the stadium for free. Or if you're John's friends, you'll just sneak in regardless.
We can get them on the scene. Get some boots on the ground. Get them in to report on the game.
They'll help us get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feed us live updates.
Before we hop off, let's get into our game predictions. Mikey, how much is Illinois winning by this week?
I'm going to say Illinois 38. Wow. All right.
Points. Bounce back game. Offense.
Virginia 28.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Double digit win for the boys. I think we're going to come out strong and stay on them the whole game after, you know, our loss to UTSA. You know, we definitely feel like we got a long way until we've proven ourselves, but this would be a game that, you know, would semi put us back on the map.
So you're reverse Vegas this week, because I think Vegas has Virginia as a 10-point favorite, but you got Illinois winning by 10.
That I do. Yep. Hammer it. Hammer the line.
But we're not a financial advisor.
Nope.
For all you folks who are out of state, like Danny, even though I get, well, you, there's no shot Utah because all the Mormons there, there's no way that they've got sports gambling legalized there yet, right?
There certainly is not any gambling allowed here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you find a way, because if you want to take Mikey's advice.
All right. Who do you have, John?
I've been kind of, my heart wants to take the Illini to win by 3. a last second field goal from James McCourt.
Ooh.
Do it.
I like that.
Do
actually.
It.
All right.
You won't.
All right.
You won't.
We're going. I was going to do something cheeky like the boys in orange and blue, something in the boys in orange and blue, something, but I guess I'm going to have to go with Illinois 20, Virginia 17. I just don't see enough from either offense, really, in terms of, I mean, granted, the scout on Virginia is a little limited in terms of this year's game film, but I just don't know if they quite have the pieces, and I expect the Ryan Walters defense to bounce back and for them to, you know, really get that pressure on them and limit the scoring opportunities, and for Illinois to play the field position game, because Blake Hayes is playing out of his mind. I mean, honestly, what was lost, and luckily Coach Bielema, you know, addressed it multiple times in both press conferences, is how good the special teams were playing sans that, you know, faux pas with the punt return fumble. But I mean, you got Blake Hayes and James McCourt absolutely going off, and I think that they'll be the difference in terms of keeping Virginia pinned back and getting that last second field goal for the boys to get a dub.
Gotcha. So you see a little more of a defensive battle. I'm going to go 34-24 Virginia this week, but it's a conditional pick, because I think if Chase Brown and Brandon Peters play this week, I would switch that to a 30-27 Illinois victory, but that's fully dependent on if both those guys are healthy and going. Art Sikowski's a solid backup in my mind, but in these tight games, you need your quarterback to make some big plays, and I don't think we've really seen that from him just yet. So I'm going to pick that 34-24 Virginia victory in Charlottesville, unless Brandon Peters and Chase Brown are out there and keeping our offense moving.
Danny Hedges.
That's right. Middleman Dan. Can't pick a side.
I'm hoping you're wrong, like, one, Dan. That's all yeah. I got to say.
Yeah, and week two. I've been on the... been on the wrong side of both of them, so
fade Danny.
Depends on which pick you're you want to be wrong, because apparently I have two of them out there.
I just hope we win. That's all I care about.
He's a simple man.
I just want to win.
You want to win, and you want
all I'm asking for.
Casey Washington to have 8 catches for 80 yards and 2 big plays.
I honestly thought he was going to say 5 catches for 87. That's where I was going, but
yeah,
give him 3 more catches and 7 less yards. We were in the ballpark.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will wrap up this double episode. You can find us on social media. We have that YouTube page up and running now with John's breakdown. So he's currently slaving away getting that UTSA film up. So anyone wants to relive the pain and misery that was a week one loss, because week zero was, I guess, a game too, even though it's our second game. You can go over to our YouTube page, search the Field Pass. You'll find it. We'll link it on our Twitter as well. It's at the Field Pass. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as well. So we have a lot of content coming, and, you know, stay tuned to our page. We're live and active during the games, trying to be funny and informative. So stay tuned to all of those social media findings, and give us a like, give us a comment, subscribe, do whatever you want. Tell us we're terrible. Tell us we're great. Or tell Mikey he needs to put on the uniform when he's playing his flag football game this next week. Thanks to everyone for listening to this episode, and go Illini.